I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are joining in studio.
It's Monday.
I'm not just you. I'm talking about
Liz Bowie. I'm sorry. She is one of those great Baltimore Sun reporters. If I need to know about education, I log on every day when I hear rumor or conjecture, and Liz Bowie has beat me to it, Mark. She has beat me
to it. Her beat. Welcome, Liz. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
So I've had all these Facebook contacts from students all over the city and the county even. The other day, a young student from the Baltimore School for the Arts wrote to me just enraged that there were budget cuts in his school and they were losing three teachers in that small school. Other students have written me saying, you know, that we're protesting in City Hall. We're walking out of the building. It's interesting to see the activism of our kids. They're really taking an interest in this.
Yes.
They really are. It's not just get me out of school. It's make my school better, you know?
These kids, Mark, were at City Hall late last week, protesting. Councilman Stokes and I went out to talk to them. He gave each one of them his business card after he received about 10 minutes of full-on explanation of why they were angry while they were shouting. And they also asked for some help because they'd heard they were going to get suspended for being at the protest at City Hall.
Really?
So Councilman Stokes called the principal not to intervene but to ask, you know, maybe there's a way.
Which school was that?
The School for the Arts.
They were going to suspend the kids?
I think maybe that was the rumor.
That was wrong.
And the principal, I will be honest with you, the headmaster, principal, whatever, was very upset that the children were out of school. I don't think they were ever in danger of suspension, however. But it made Councilman Stokes look like a great guy. But they are really articulate, Mark, about their frustration and these budget cuts. And they see that they are going to be impacted by the loss of however many teachers they have to lose.
So, Liz, how do you analyze this, the stuff you've been focusing on with this?
Well, interestingly, there was a similar protest by county students about a month ago at the county executive's in front of his office building. Again, a group of students who were very vocal, very articulate about the issues they saw, the loss of their teachers. So I think in both the county and the city, this is going on. The city actually hasn't released its budget yet, so it's a little hard to tell right now exactly how that's going to play out. And the city and the county are very different in that the city, in the city, principals have a lot more autonomy and control, so they decide how the money they get is going to be spent. In the county, what's happening is the school system says, here's what the student teacher ratio will be in your school, and here's how many positions you have to cut. So they're very different scenarios. The county budget is already out. The proposal right now is to eliminate about 196 teaching positions through attrition. There will be actually about 271 positions that wouldn't be fully funded because enrollment in Baltimore County is increasing. So if you were going to keep class sizes at the same size they are today, you would have to add 55 more teachers. So if you add the 196 teachers being cut and the ones that you should add, then you come up to about a 271
deficit. Mm.
Yeah.
So, but is an argument going on in Baltimore County between a discussion of sorts between the county executive Kevin Kamenetz and Dr. Hairston, who runs the system?
That's
correct. Kamenetz wants he's fully funded. What does it mean when he says one side saying there's no money and Kamenetz is saying yes, you do have the money?
Yes. The budget in the school budget has actually increased a tiny bit this year. Or Kamenetz is proposing or Hairston proposed that it be increased slightly and that's been accepted. So what they're arguing over is where that money should be spent, where the current budget should be spent. And there are many elected officials and parents and teachers say you should cut administrative positions. There are thousands of people who work in the system who don't directly work in schools. And so the elected officials are saying, folks, let's lose those positions through attrition, not teachers. That's what the argument's essentially about.
Liz, could you explain for me and our listeners, in the city, there is a debate going on as we were talking to the young people, and they were very clear that there were positions that were not being funded. But they interpret that as teacher cuts. When we talk to the administration and when we talk to the school headquarters, they see it very differently. This is level funding, but it is somehow the elimination of positions, correct, as opposed to actually eliminating current teachers.
Yes. In all cases, we're not laying off teachers. Okay. We're eliminating positions. So it's either through attrition or, retirements, people just leaving the system. Each of these systems have thousands and thousands of people teaching, and so you lose teachers every year. But I think that in the city, the issue is that and also in the county, is that they've given teachers and other workers increases in salary, and health care benefits have gone up. So keeping funding the same is actually means that you have to cut in some places. And I think all over the state right now, there's an argument going on between school boards and county officials. And county officials are saying to school boards, hey, you're cutting, you're increasing salaries. You've negotiated increases for teachers and other workers, but you don't have taxing authority. And we're the ones who have to pay for that. So we're a little fed up with you right now.
What do our listeners think? 410-319-8888 in the counties, in the city here, parents, teachers, students, what's going on in your schools? What do you know? What are the rumors are going on? What have you been involved in with teachers being cut back in different schools? You've heard all over the place. And what it says to you about where we are, what our priorities are, and what our priorities should be. 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy and I are joined by Liz Bowie, who is the Baltimore Sun Education Reporter, 410-319-8888. That's all. It's all very confusing, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, because who ultimately makes these decisions? I mean, is it the county governments? Clearly, the city government has nothing to do with anything when it comes to city schools. They contribute a little bit of money, but basically, there's not much they have to do about city schools. I guess that's pretty true. But in the counties, there's much more of an intimate political relationship between councils, executives, when they have one, and the schools.
The county council, however, in Baltimore Baltimore County will tell you that they're extremely frustrated that they have almost no say in how the school system spends its budget, the money they give them, and they say, "Hey, we give you more than half of the county budget, but we don't really have any say in how that money is spent." So there is a lot of friction, a lot of tension, especially in times when there's education funding hasn't increased.
So who should make a decision on how the money should be spent? I mean, I'm curious what our listeners think as well. I mean, do the school teachers, administrators make that decision? Not teachers. They make very few decisions. But school administrators make that decision? Or should it be the politicians make those decisions? Because then those decisions become politicized.
That's correct. They do. And I think that the tension in Baltimore County is now that, on one hand, you have a group that feels that the school board isn't listening to their voice. And I think that's the frustration, that they're not getting answers on why the proposed budget is the way it is.
I'm curious, Liz, if you could translate the recent legislative session and the big debate about education funding. Is this what has put a lot of these systems in this position to have to really make some hard choices about the teacher levels? I mean, in the city of Baltimore, Mark and I had people on the show who were just outraged about $15 million being cut from their budget and for the city. That I think those dollars were restored under some compromises that were made by the legislature. But I don't think that's the case for all jurisdictions. Is that one of the problems in Baltimore County?
No.
No, okay.
I think what's happening is that, and I'm probably exaggerating this or oversimplifying it tremendously, but I think what's happened is that since the recession hit, county government, local governments have been cutting their budgets. They've been furloughing. They've been laying off. They've been cutting debt back to the bare bone. The one area that hasn't been hit as hard is schools. And so governments are saying, local governments are saying, hey, guys, when is it going to be your turn? And there's a lot of frustration there. I think that, you know, mostly the legislature has held harmless education and said this will be our number one funding priority. On the other hand, you know, the school systems say, you know, just holding steady at our 2008 level isn't good enough. That's not going to get us what we need in terms of just keeping our schools where they are.
So, I mean, there's some argument that people are making is that, I mean, the schools are underfunded to start with.
Right.
The teachers are not being paid enough.
Right.
And we're talking about laying teachers off. And then with these incredible articles, interesting articles anyway, in the New York Times recently, suggesting that we should pay our teachers, start them off at $50,000 or $60,000 a year and let them get to six figures to start bringing a core of people into our into our schools that will make it a profession and stay there and really grow and get the top students, people who are really motivated to be teachers. And they point to Finland and point to other places where this is the norm. This is what happens.
And certainly Baltimore City is making an effort to get that way. And the new teachers contract really bumps up salaries and gives teachers an opportunity to make a lot of money. But that's bumping up against the fiscal reality that they're not going to have more money, a lot more money next year.
So, folks, these are your schools. Where are you? 410-319-8888. I'm curious. Should we be paying our teachers more money? Are we willing to pay more taxes? Where does the money come from? And what do we do in terms of these battles over our schools? I mean, we are in Baltimore City schools right now. Every school that I know has been told you have to lay off certain teachers. Why are they laying off teachers? Almost every school I've heard is laying off certain amounts of teachers, some less than others, some more than others. I mean, but if there's a part of the political battle, it seems to me, is a battle over the value of education in America and what we want to pay for and what we don't want to pay for.
You know, those students from the School of the Arts are at City Hall right now. They are,
as we speak,
they are in the chamber and they plan to. I'm just amazed at these young people. They're planning to catch these council members as they try to leave the council and ask them to save these teacher positions. Now, Liz, what do you think is driving these young people, this energy and this passion around teacher positions? Is it teachers? Their favorite teachers are saying, look, we need some energy around this, or are these children just really afraid that they're not going to have the quality of teachers or the number of teachers to be successful in the classroom?
I think it is. Sort of what's driving them is the power of great teaching. I think that in Baltimore County, most of the teacher cuts are in high schools. Mm. So 10% of the faculty of each of the high schools in the county is being cut. And so you're seeing electives being dropped. You're seeing class sizes rise. You're seeing some of the courses that students really love and that have meant a lot to them are going to be gone. And high school students care, you know. They really do, and they can express
themselves.
It's a
critical time, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have going to go right to the phones here to Dee, our first caller, and James right behind her. But this is from a student at School for the Arts, Amor, who writes in, I love your show and thought you'd find this interesting. My school, Baltimore School for the Arts, has been affected like other schools with budget cuts and has laid off two teachers and faculty members. The student body understands that we have lost money, but we are outraged by what teachers were laid off as well. The main paint teacher for the visual arts department and our health fitness teacher, Mr. Wheeler. The fact that we are losing a teacher and a class that is Baltimore City students we need to graduate angers us. To protest this, Baltimore School of the Arts students are protesting Monday, May 9th. This was last week. And so he was just going on to talk about that. And this is sent by Mary Payton Randolph of the class of 2013.
Wow.
410-319-8888. Dee in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, Dee.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, Mark, two things I want to say. First, I see this as the systematic defunding of public schools so they can give some of that money to charter schools. I honestly feel that. Second thing I want to say, these politicians that are pushing these cuts need to be identified, and local groups, including churches and organizations, need to tell them to their faces, if you keep doing this, we're going to vote you out of office. Typical example, Fenty, the former mayor of D.C., is not in office right now because of Michelle Reed. Okay?
They
voted him out. And so, this is, and we can talk, we can call the talk show, and, that includes myself. But, we need to get up and do something. Tell these politicians, we're going to vote you out like how we voted Fenty out of office. Thank you.
Thank you.
The thing is that in both Baltimore City and Baltimore County, elected officials, the officials making the decisions aren't elected. They're appointed.
Mm-hmm. And just politically, though I think Michelle Reed was a huge problem for Mayor Fenty, there were other issues that really led to his demise in that city as well.
Well, and Michelle Reed just came in like a bulldozer, and as opposed to Dr. Andres Alonso, who has finessed a lot of his things and really thought about it and tried to make partners of the teachers' union, mm-hmm. as opposed to going after them, and did it a very different way,
most
with different sensibility.
Mm-hmm. But she's considered a visionary around the country for not those tactics, but her right. vision on educating urban children. Very much.
410-319-8888. James, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good evening.
I like your show. I really do enjoy it.
Thank you.
My personal opinion, they need to cut some of these politicians. They need to cut their salaries. I just can't believe they cut these teachers like this. And that just makes me wonder where the money's going. Baltimore City in itself makes enough money to pay these teachers, what they need. And as far as cut, period, I believe that the city makes enough money, especially in taxes. They misappropriate funds. Just ridiculous. Somebody's behind it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. I'm not sure Baltimore City has the funds to take care of this, but I think that.
I don't think so.
The problem is that when we talk about education in this country, we're always talking about that is one of the problems with education. It's also localized in terms of funding.
Yes.
Depending on where you are, it's based on your property taxes. So poorer areas get less money. Poor areas get less money, and the wealthy areas can afford more. When in other countries, France, Britain, Singapore, Finland, there's a national education budget, and every locality gets the same amount of money per student where they are, and whatever extras they need. But it's not based on where you live.
Mm.
That's part of it. It's where we decide to make the investments, and people are terrified of this idea of money coming from the federal government to do this, because I think they'll lose control.
Autonomy, that's right. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting as you watch this, and I watch Dr. Alonso very closely, and I've had some problems with his leadership, his boldness, and some of the – he is one of those very strong leaders. For example, we're not talking about it, but when they were talking in the legislature of putting some elected positions on the board, he said, I will resign. If you pass this legislation, I'm out of Baltimore. And I found that fascinating. I don't think other CEOs would have had that kind of influence or would have had that kind of power over legislators to say, look, I'm out of here, because he has done such a tremendous job at focusing the system. But, Mark, it's amazing to me. One of the things that Dr. Alonso has done, and when I talk to principals, one of the things they praise him for is this sense of autonomy over their money, that the money comes to their school, and really they have pretty much their say on where the priorities will go for their school. But that's difficult when that number becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. That becomes very difficult.
What about what Anthony was talking about?
Yeah, I think Alonso has been brilliant, and I'm sure he will say when these teacher cuts start, really actually happening, that he'll say, I'm not making those decisions. The
right.
principals
That's
are.
Right.
And I think it'll be the discretionary budgets that probably – the discretionary money that the principals have that it'll be up in the air about. But I think that he will have a difficult balancing act this time around because he did, you know, get a negotiated contract that is very expensive. And it may – it may do some great things, but it won't be seen doing that this year when the cuts are being made.
Maybe it'll stimulate people to fight for more money for education.
Maybe
it will. 410-319-8888. Let's see, who's next? George in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, George, welcome.
I am not really familiar with a lot of how the budget works, but I can tell from experience. One thing I think Baltimore County, Baltimore City needs to do is have more support for the teachers from an administrative point. If you've got children in the classroom that are acting out, I'm not saying dispose of children at all, but something has to be done. And as a former teacher, when you have a child call you a name that's way out of sorts, and the next day they're back in the classroom, that's why I think, one, you lose some good teachers. Money is needed. But money is not going to solve that problem. I think we need to look seriously at the conduct of our children. I have a 17-year-old son who I'm paying an enormous amount of money, crazy, in a private school because they're not going to stand. If he acts out, he's out of there.
And are you teaching the city? Were you teaching the city or one of the counties?
I taught at Frederick Douglass back in the 90s. And, I mean, I thought it was an excellent school. The principal, I think, tried to do the best that she could. However, the behaviors were just atrocious. I mean, these were kids. One child came to me and says, "Hey, Mr., you know, we're going to have a gang war here before long, so you may want to go home early." And I know you're talking primarily about the financial issue, but I think with the students that want to learn, that truly want to learn, they can't do it because there's so much attention paid to those students that are acting out that it's, I mean, I've seen teachers with fear. They are afraid to even leave their classroom door unlocked. I think that's an issue.
No, George, it is an issue. I mean, we, over the weekend at the Maryland Film Festival, I was talking to some people who were watching the film The Interrupters, which is a film about the organization started in Chicago, where former gang members and ex-cons intervene in violence between people on the streets. And I was talking to several people outside who came to watch the film, some of whom who had contracts, to work in schools and worked at Douglass, where the violence level went down for the 2 or 3 years where they were actually there to intervene. Then the new principals decided not to use the money for these people doing the intervention work, and the fight started breaking out again and spilled out into the streets of Grinch Falls Parkway, fighting literally in the streets, boys and girls. And so, I mean, there's a reality that kids coming from, some kids from inner city neighborhoods, part of gangs who are in a very violent culture, that's why it takes more than just a teacher in the school. When you have these young people who go in, young men and women go in who have done time in prison, who have turned, as I call them, there's nothing more powerful on earth than a thug who's turned to peace. And they move into these schools and they actually counsel and work with kids. And I mean that stuff is really needed. So you can't do that. Yep. That stuff is, I think, critical to our schools as well.
Absolutely,
I agree with you, George.
100%.
I agree
with you. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, George. Thanks for calling.
Bye bye.
Any comments before we go back to the phones?
I think I've seen so many times when principals can make a difference in calming, in getting discipline restored in a out of control high school, and I remember Northern High School. Several years, a decade ago now, I guess, that was so out of control.
Yeah.
And then they got a really phenomenal principal in, and you could walk through the halls again. Kids were really relaxed and feeling good about themselves. It was really a 180-degree change.
That what you just said, I mean, really begs the question that tackling the question of the role of the principal, the power of a good principal, is always underestimated here. In this process, principals go, "I can't control the school, I can't do it." But you're talking about what happened at a school that was just out of control.
Completely out of control.
I remember touring the school before they changed principals, and they took us on that tour specifically to show us, and I was stunned by the level of activity in the hallways, under the stairwells, and I won't go into details, but there was so much going on. And within, I'd say, 6 or 7 months of the change, it felt like an entirely different school. And I know in our city, Dr. Alonzo and several organizations are working to create principals, to put them through a set of paces that where they really do view things, Mark, in a very different way,
right?
Including mediation and bringing people into school. The problem in that becomes financially for these principals, and the ones I've spoken to, is that they have to watch these contracts and watch their budgets so closely that it's never enough to do all the things that they really want to do.
More money for our schools. People say money is not the answer. Money is not the answer, but clearly is part of the answer. A huge part of the answer.
Big part.
410-319-8888. Let's go to who's been holding on the longest. I think it's Sandy and then Tehran. And then one more caller, we'll move on. Sandy, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Sandy. Welcome.
Thank you. I want to say I enjoy the show very much.
Thank you very much.
My question is, it was written in the paper that the superintendent for Baltimore City Public Schools was looking to hire some deputy superintendents, and they were going to make upwards of $175,000. And I wanted to know if that proposal was still on the table, and if so, how that will be funded, since it seems as though teacher positions and assistant positions are being dispersed. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that proposal, unless something's happened in the last week, is still on the table. Dr. Alonzo is cutting 89 central office positions to try and give more money to schools. So I don't know. We haven't seen the budget yet. It hasn't come out. So it's very hard to tell exactly, you know, how much each of the – how the money – whether it's a net gain or a net loss or what. I have to say the city, once again, I think could be criticized for being the last jurisdiction probably in the state to release its budget. It is now the middle of May.
City schools, or do you mean the city government?
City schools. Almost every school system in the state released a budget in, months and months ago. The county released it in January, I believe. So this gives the public very little time to comment on it.
What do you think is going on inside of the city school system that the budget has not been?
This has been a perennial problem with the city school system, and I've never figured it out.
And you've been covering this for a long time.
A long time.
A long time.
I'm either really stupid or something else is going on.
I don't think so. 410-319-8888. Let's take a quick break. We have to take a break at 30. Ron James and Baba African are the next three callers up. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Can you hang with us for a little while, Liz? Liz Bowie is with us here. Us is Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're looking at education. I'll throw some more ideas out when we come back from this break. On the way to the break, let me just remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with Liz Bowie, who is the Baltimore Sun education reporter. We've covered that beat for a long time. It was more about our education system and how it works and doesn't work than, or it's forgotten, I should say, more than most people know. That's what I'm trying to say. I always get that one backwards. Totally put that one backwards, didn't I? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones. And Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Well, welcome.
Great. Just wanted to comment a little on the school system and the budget. I'm currently in a master's program for human services, and it wasn't until I had the chance to really sit down and work on a budget to truly understand the sensitivity, the priorities, and how to try to make everything work with less. So I give kudos to all those who are crunching numbers to give us the best school system they can possibly give us. I really do. The second thing is, one of the callers stated about behavior in the schools, and it kind of, I don't know, concerns me, because we look to the teachers, the principals, and everyone else to do our job as parents. So at some point, we have to step up and be accountable for the behavior of the people or the children that are in the schools. For example, if you know you have a child who has behavior problems, how often have you chatted with the teacher to partner with them to modify that behavior? How often have you even talked with the child and created a plan to help them get better with the behavior? So before we continue to criticize the teachers, the principals, the school systems, we have to clean our own houses first and be accountable for the behavior that we send off into the streets. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Ron. I mean, a lot of people talk about parents being more accountable to the school system and to our society as a whole in terms of their children and their behavior. It is a double-edged sword, though.
I was talking to one of our charter school leaders yesterday, Mark, and she explained to me, oftentimes in charter schools, this is the case, to be honest with you, it is mandatory that parents participate in the school activities in the classroom and in the education of their children. And she made the comment, and I think she was on point, that it's not something that our other public schools could not do. Actually create an environment where parents feel welcome, where parents are, where it is mandatory that they participate. And if you do that, I'm not sure how that model works, but if you do that, I could see modifying a lot of these children's behavior. When you know your mother's going to walk in that room, that classroom, your behavior is modified.
I wonder, go ahead, Ellis.
There was a brilliant principal, I think, whose idea was to use some extra money in our budget. I think this happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago. City principal who used the extra money in her budget to give parents just a tiny bit of money to come in to the classroom. And she hired a bunch of them. And she tried to hire the parents of the kids who were the worst behavior problems. And she said it was a miraculous change in the school.
And sometimes, though, you know, when we talk about parents being involved during the school day,
it's tough.
A lot of people work. I mean, this is not 1958 when, you know, mom was
June
home.
Cleaver was at home.
June Cleaver probably never existed. doesn't exist now, for sure. And parents, many of these parents, especially in poor neighborhoods, work 2 or 3 jobs just to make ends meet. And so it's
tough.
It is hard. 410-3, not trying to make excuses, just putting reality on the table. I think. Maybe I'm wrong. 410-319-8888. And James, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark.
Hi, James.
How you doing? Les Boy, this is James Williams, the parent who got the water shut off in the schools. And I'm a parent surrogate. I work with the education committee for the NAACP for years. And so I've really been involved. Daughter's graduating from Revel this year, thank God. One of the things that we have to always remember, we have parents and we have people who have children. There's a big difference in that, number one. Secondly, one of the things that I learned being in the NAACP Education Committee was, over the years when Baltimore City had surpluses of money, they never increased the percentage of funding to Baltimore City schools, which really, really boggles the mind that there's such a surplus of money in the schools in Baltimore City. Yet they never increased the funding to Baltimore City schools, which would have actually put Baltimore ahead as far as money per pupil than a lot of other jurisdictions had they done that. Mm.
That's true, yeah.
So we have to look at the responsibility of our politicians who we pay our taxes to, who don't adequately fund, have never adequately funded our school system since Schaefer, to be honest. Okay, so we have to put the funding component and the responsibility where it lays, because I pay way too much tax in Baltimore City for all these other services I don't even really receive adequately to begin with. And yet they never adequately funded education when I was in school, or up to now when my third child is graduating from school system. And it's people have to wake up to the reality that funding is actually a political component plays a major factor in how funding is given to our children and our school system. So that's right. All I'd like to say, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
What the politicians in Baltimore would have said to you is that over a period of 10 years, the enrollment dropped from about 100 and something thousand to 82,000 students. So that while the absolute numbers, a number of dollars that from Baltimore City did not increase, the amount of per pupil funding from the city did increase. You can argue it both ways. But
you can. And I think there's a larger social and political argument you can make. I'm thinking about a conversation you'll hear later this late at 6:30 this evening that I had with Michelle Alexander, who wrote The New Jim Crow, about the amount of money we put into prisons in America as opposed to education. You know, right. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger had to say, we're putting more money into prisoners' uniforms than we are into caps and gowns for kids to graduate in terms of where we invest our money. And 2.1 million Americans in prison, millions and millions of poor people in America who have gone through the prison system, been totally affected by that experience, as have their children and their families, those children in our schools. And I mean, it depends where America wants to put its priorities. Do we want to put them in prisons, or do we want to put them in our schools?
I think that this goes also, Mark, to, and I don't know if Liz agrees. She won't take a position, of course. But
she's a journalist.
That's right.
I play talk radio. She's
me too. That's right. That there is a lot of truth in the fact that if we were to elect even a partial school board, now it gets touchy, but if you were to elect people, that you may actually push the actual spending priorities in a different direction, that you would have activists and you would have, at that point, elected officials who do feel the pressure of reelection and feel the pressure of parent involvement and community involvement. And they may listen because they will be held accountable to listen to, just like James said, a different level of priority when it comes to spending those dollars. Now, there are people who argue eloquently against an elected school board that keeps them autonomous, lets them make decisions, and let them set those priorities. I think that you walk this line of holding people accountable. And maybe if you were directly held accountable by citizens, there may be some difference in what the spending priorities would be. Dr. Alonzo is very powerful when it comes to that school board. I think they follow, they take very seriously his advice and counsel, and 99.9% of the time, I think they go in the direction that he insists they go.
What has your reporting said to you about the controversy over school boards, elected, non-elected?
I think it is an incredibly complicated issue, and I think a good appointed school board can be very powerful because they, you know, they don't have to get elected. So, you know, you get individuals who are very, very, very bright and very and leaders in the community who aren't going to run for a school board. On the other hand, I think, you know, at times you can get school boards that are who are appointed, have appointed members who the people who've appointed them have not thought very carefully. They were sort of payback for something rather than people who had a real interest in education. It's clear in Baltimore County right now that if some of these teaching positions aren't put back in the budget or aren't funded, there will be a very powerful movement for an appointed elect school board next year.
And a movement to get rid of Hairston, I think, is going to mount. Do you think
that's true? Well, I think he's in his last year. He'll be in his last year of the contract.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's not said publicly where he's going or what he wants, so who knows?
410-319-8888. Baba African, you're on the air.
Yes, I am a teacher myself of the Healing Arts of Africa, and I do workshops, and I don't even charge. Mm-hmm. And I see the lack of interest in my people towards my workshop. Now, with the system, their interest is on the wars. That's where all the money is going to, the wars. And it's no interest in education like it used to be. And these are revolutionary times.
Mm-hmm.
And war is not the answer.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
But I think that what Baba says on some levels is there are two things that made me think about what he said. One is that, again, we invest trillions of dollars in these two wars, and they're not investing them in our cities, in our infrastructure building, in our schools, places that we, this country could use them right now. I mean, that's so the war, I think, issue is not an issue that does, that clearly does affect education. And he, as a music teacher, I mean, we've had numerous shows here about the power of arts and music, the creative arts in education. And the problem always is, you know, when you look at Baltimore City schools and many other public schools, that they're also focused on this regimentation.
Of testing and a whole bunch of other stuff, yeah.
And when we say our kids do not compare to the test scores don't compare to Finland, Singapore, Germany, blah, 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 on, ad nauseum, that if you look at that in light of the scores by the kids who go to parochial and private schools, the gap isn't that deep. And those are schools that aren't regimented that deeply and have music and art kids have to take part in, as well as athletics and academics. And sometimes I think this whole way we run our public schools is part of the problem.
The public schools in Baltimore County, I'll just give them a little hurrah, really do invest in the arts, and both music and visual arts. And kids start taking music and art at a very early age. They do musical instruments from fourth grade on. Up, they can do it through senior year. There's a huge investment in the arts, and you do wonder if some of those test scores or some of the quality of those schools isn't the result of some of the investment in the arts.
What do you think, folks? Where did you go? There was a bunch of people there.
There were.
I talked too much. Well, let you talk. 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy and I here with Liz Bowie as we look at our schools, the arguments over funding. And that's, you know, it was no mistake that the one teacher called earlier, there are many teachers like him who have their kids in private schools.
Right. I would say that there is about to be a major battle across the state over funding for education that's just kind of getting going.
How's that? What is that story?
Well, there are about five counties now, I think we're up to five counties, maybe six, who the county councils have said, we're not going to maintain the same level of funding for schools that we had in the past. There is a...
Decreasing them, you mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Local funding. And it was written into the Thornton Law that every county had to maintain in this something called maintenance of effort, so that you couldn't reduce local funding as the state ramped up its funding over from 2002 on. So counties were never allowed to decrease the amount of money they put in per pupil for funding. So five counties, and if you wanted to, you'd had to apply for a waiver. Apply to the State Board of Education for a waiver. Well, six counties applied for waivers this year and then took them back.
Wow.
And it appears now that they just are basically saying, we don't think we have to apply. And so we are setting up ourselves for a real battle over whether we're going to maintain the kind of funding, require local school systems or local county governments to maintain their level of funding in education.
And what counties are in the midst of this?
They're Anne Arundel, Montgomery, some smaller counties around the state. And not everybody, Talbot County is another county. We'll see what happens. But we are definitely, there's going to be a very major discussion in the next 9 months over how much local governments have to contribute.
I have no question about that for you, but let me go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. That's really fascinating. This is going to brew up between now and the next legislative session.
Yes.
In Annapolis. 410-319-8888. Angela, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Good. Thank you. I just wanted to say that, first of all, I am a graduate of Morgan State University out of the Department of Art, actually. And when I graduated, I thought that I wanted to teach. And at the time, there wasn't a lot. It was in the early 80s. There wasn't a lot of teaching jobs, and there wasn't a lot of respect for the arts in schools back then. And, of course, a lot has changed since then, and I'm still an artist, although I don't actually work in that field right now. But I'm grateful that I have had a career, and now that I'm very close to retiring, and I still have some of my brain left, and I can go into the field that I really have a passion for, and that is the arts. I'm a performing artist right now, my mm-hmm. son and I both, and I see that the world has realized just how much art is important with young people, old people, you know, art therapy, art education. And I heard someone say something about art. Well, anyway, the point of the matter is that the art is just therapeutic. And my son right now is performing with Center Stage and Single Carrot Theater. And he's had some issues with his father, and on a personal level, and if it weren't for those safe space areas within the theater, I don't believe that he would be as healthy mentally and emotionally as he is right now, because he's been able to create, write his own pieces and perform them and have his peers perform them, and he's been able to express them and kind of like get it out, whereas some children have had to just hold a lot of heavy things in.
I understand what you're saying. I think, mm-hmm. and we're focusing now on the schools, though, and I think that.
Well, just to say, the fact that art is at least appreciated in that it is there, it is somewhere, I should say, and it's growing, and it's in Baltimore, not just in the schools. It's outside of the schools too, but
right.
within the schools, because some of the same plays that he performed outside were actually in his school. And I mean, they make sure that it's important, and that the kids get exposure to it, and the art education is recognized as being an important element in the academics as well, is what I was trying to get at. Thanks for bringing me back on track, because I do get a little bit off track.
That's all right. That's all right, Angela. This is fine. I'm glad you joined us.
Yeah. And
thanks so much. I mean, I think that is a. I think that is a critical component in our schools, and that we do miss them in a lot of our city schools. I mean,
many of those kids are so talented, and they have so much to offer. You know, I'm very much involved and exposed with the Art on Purpose project that's out now, too. So, yeah.
I didn't mean just. Okay. So I think that's. The issue of arts in our school is becoming a critical one in the arena. I mean,
definitely.
When you look at what Johns Hopkins is working on in terms of brain
right,
and education
right.
and the function of arts, the function of music inside of our school system, and then when you talk about what's happening with the arguments about to take place over the next 9 months over funding, it always strikes me as how our political leaders, when it comes to questions like this around education, always just they're looking at the brass tacks of their fiscal, of the myopic fiscal point of view. I mean, I'd never see them having these discussions about the importance of education, what it really means, where do we want to invest our money, how should we get together and do it. They're all kind of fighting over this, how to control their teeny little tiny piece of their pie.
Right. So far, though, Maryland is kind of unique in the amount of protection education funding has gotten in the state. Not everybody would agree with that, but if you compare to some other states where there have been, I mean, they're talking about laying off 4,000 teachers in Baltimore, I mean, in New York City.
That's right.
You know, it looks, what's happening here is pretty mild. On the other hand, you know, we are going to see, I think, a really serious discussion by the locals about just how much we really want to increase aid to education.
And I think we've become so anecdotal, Mark, when it comes to the legislature, and we say it just kind of falls out of our mouth so easily. They're number one, the only job of the legislature,
right,
constitutionally, is to fund education. But really, there is, as Liz says, it's much more complicated than that. And as we've been feeling the squeeze from the federal level on down, making sure that education remains, it will always be a priority. But what does that priority mean when it comes to the other things we have to deal with as a legislature, as local government? It's becoming very tough. But then the standards continue to rise and rise and rise. These standards that teachers have to meet, the standards that students have to meet, and schools are teaching to those standards in ways that I think oftentimes raise questions about, is education truly our priority?
I think that also school systems are going to have to go look for places where there is fat to cut. And I'm not sure that they've done that yet. Maybe
where
some
systems.
Where
do you see the fat after all these years of reporting? Where does that fat live?
Well, I'm not sure I could identify all of that for you, Mark. But I think that, for instance, in Baltimore County, there is this issue of why are you cutting teachers first? And
right.
Why are you funding some other things? You know, is the secretary who sits in Timonium as necessary as the one who's in the school office? Is the guy who pays, or the people who pay all the bills in the central office, are they as important as two or three teachers in a high school? And I guess you have to make those decisions. I'm not that smart to know how to do that. But
I think
there have to be some – people are going to have to wrestle with some issues.
And what you've said about what we talked about earlier with Andres Alonso, I mean, for all the criticism he's received from the different quarters, he has – been a priority of cutting North Avenue.
He has.
To the bone.
He has.
He's cutting positions every year. He cuts more positions, put them back, not to save money, but to put that money into the classroom.
But he could cut a lot without hurting too much. I've looked at the state numbers, and if you saw how big the administration was in North Avenue compared to every other school system in the state, you would be like, wow, you could cut a lot of people before you got to the bone.
I'll talk to Dr. Alonso about that when he comes here next, at the end of the school year. Liz Bowie, thank you so much for taking this hour with us.
Thank you.
Liz Bowie is Baltimore Sun education reporter. Join Anthony McCarthy here with me on this Monday. On our way to take a break, I want to remind you, when we come back from this break, we are going to be joined by the Reverend Reginald Green and Hank Thomas on this 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Freedom Rides. Both these men were on the Freedom Rides through Mississippi and Alabama. Hank Thomas was aboard that bus. You will never forget that picture, May 14, 1961. It was firebombed in Anniston, Alabama. He'll be joining us here for the next half an hour to talk about that 50th anniversary. So please stay with us for that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. All the information is right there. Anthony and I will be right back. Stay with us.